Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes, yes. You are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. We have Elijah Campbell hitting the switches, and we are back for another week as we continue to progress through the offseason. You got free agency coming up. You got the draft coming up. So you know what we do. We're going to bring you a couple of prospects this week, one being Cade Johnson from South Dakota State. He's a receiver that could also return kicks. He's a playmaker. You guys are going to really like what we'll go over with him. And then also Jonathan Cooper. I mean, we're addressing a couple positions that the Titans need to look at, the wide receiver position. And Cooper is an edge player, DE/OLB from the Ohio State University. Yes, I'm looking forward to that. But for right now, I think we have to kick things off with some of the more immediate, more pertinent things that are going on right now. And that's the free agent look. And here's the deal. The Titans are going to have under $5 million under the cap, a cap space. It makes you really just have to weigh out a few guys against each other. Corey Davis versus Jonnu Smith versus Jayon Brown. And I picked these three because these are the three guys that I think it kind of starts with, where it's like, okay, you could get one, maybe two of this group, but these are the ones where you say, okay, it's sign Jonnu Smith and so-and-so, sign Jayon Brown and so-and-so, sign Corey Davis and so-and-so. They're kind of like the steak of the meal, if you envision free agency being a meal, as far as the guys that are up to be re-signed. So I've gone back and forth. I mean, Corey Davis is a guy I think they have to bring back. Jonnu Smith is a guy I think they have to bring back. Jayon Brown is a guy that they have to bring back. But I want to look this week at Jayon Brown, especially since I have a post coming out about Jayon Brown and his value to the team, and especially fresh off of the Super Bowl. You watch what the Bucs were able to do to the Chiefs. That second level of the defense with Lavonte David and Devin White, these guys were doing the thing. Now, yes, Travis Kelce had 10 receptions for 133, but they kept him out of the end zone. And I think that was huge. Definitely the pass rush. You know, a lot of attention is going to that. It should. Don't get me wrong. But I think those linebackers had a lot to do with that too. And if you look, since 2018 when Jayon Brown became a starter, he's been one of their most consistent defensive players and one of their best all-around defensive players. And in the post that I have coming out on ESPN.com, you could check out what I did. I compared him to Miles Jack, Zach Cunningham, Corey Littleton, and who was the other guy? Miles Jack, Zach Cunningham, Corey Littleton, and there was one other, Shaq Thompson out of Carolina. These are all guys who signed deals within the last 2 years. And I compared the numbers to that. Jayon Brown is very comparable to all of them. He has a bit less tackles, right? And I'm talking about from 18 to, from 17, 2017 through this past season. Remember, he didn't play six games this season. By the way, the defense allowed more yards and more points per game while he was gone. Just saying. I think really the versatility aspect is the key. And that's something that, John Robinson, he spoke. That's something that I asked him, just, really, what is it that Jayon Brown brings to the table? Why does he make this defense better? Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I think that, he's a really instinctive player. He's good in zone coverage. He's good in man coverage. He's been disruptive as a blitzer for us. He's kind of this, I don't want to say new age of linebacker, but this kind of this undersized, productive player who relies on his instincts, his speed and his ability to match players. If you can take a target away that the quarterback's going to throw to, then the quarterback's got to hold the ball longer, and it gives you a chance to get there in the rush. So, you know, he's been a good player for us. You know, unfortunate, we certainly could have used him down the stretch there when he got hurt. But we'll see kind of how that goes moving forward.
And that's exactly what we'll do. We'll see how it goes moving forward. I thought it was interesting how he mentioned new wave of linebackers. That's what Levante David is. That's what Devin White is. And it's these new guys that can roam sideline to sideline with crazy amounts of speed that are very efficient at you know, against the run game, but they also double as coverage guys. That's where Jayon Brown falls in. Now, I will say this because I talked to Jayon this past week, and I asked him about the pass rushing aspect because he has 6 sacks just 2 years ago. In 2019, he had 6 sacks. You know, 2018, that is, excuse me. He has 6 sacks, and it's just, where did that go? And he said that he hasn't been used as much in those situations, but the pass rush is there. I remember talking to him a while ago, around the time when I first got here, and he was telling me how he trained with Clay Matthews and Kenny Clark, and they worked on pass rushing moves, and that really sprung him into a really outstanding season. He has more sacks over that time than any of those 4 guys that I mentioned. Now, those 4 guys that I mentioned all signed pretty solid contracts. We're talking about, with the exception of Corey Littleton, who signed with the Raiders, I think he was like 3 years, 40-something million. But all the other guys were in the 4-year, $53 to $57 million range. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that's probably where Jayon Brown's going to fall. And it is what it is, right? You want the production, you got to pay for it. So we'll see what happens there. I know David Long is waiting in the wings to be able to take over. But, you know, it's just one of those things where, like, you saw last year with Jack Conklin, right? A guy that was clearly valuable to the team. He was able to hit free agency. He got a bigger number, and they did what they had to do to replace him. Now, part of what they had to do to replace Conklin was select Isaiah Wilson. We know how that situation turned out. But there was a conversation that was had with these guys. And I like the way John Robinson revealed what it was that he said with Conklin and basically what he said with Brown, Jonnu Smith, and Corey Davis. This is what he had to say as far as the exit interview was concerned.
Yeah, proud of both of those guys. You know, I had the same conversation at the end of the season with those guys that I had with, you know, with Jack Conklin a year ago. You know, I was like, hey, you guys, you've done, you know, everything we've asked you here, and we're going to be competitive and trying to keep you. But at the end of the day, you're going to have a decision to make if you have suitors, you know, with other teams. And, you know, I had that same discussion with those 2 guys, and, you know, we'll see what we can figure out. And but at the end of the day, if they choose to capitalize on free agency in the market, I wish them nothing but the best. They've done everything that we've asked them to do.
Now, that's really interesting, that parting word or phrase, if they choose to take advantage of the open market or capitalize on it. That tells me if these guys hit the market, there's a good chance they're going to be gone. All of them will be in high demand. Jonnu Smith, Jayon Brown, Corey Davis, they'll all be in high demand. Now, granted, you do have the option to tag a player. It's something that they did last year with Derrick Henry, and then they worked the deal out. If that were to be the case, I think Jonnu Smith would be the guy that they would tag. I don't see any way this team will pay Corey Davis $15 million to play in 2021. I don't see how they would go in the $14 to $15 million range to pay Jayon Brown in 2021. Now, granted, a 4-year, $56 million deal is averaging out to about $14 million. But remember, that's funny money. The real money is the guaranteed money, which they would probably have in the course of the front end of the contract. So all I'm saying is this. The first week of February, or excuse me, of March, that's going to be a time to really pay attention, and that's when you'll really get a better picture of who's going to be here next year as far as the guys returning and who isn't going to. That being said, we're going to move on, but I do have a job for each of you. You know what you got to do. If you are listening to this podcast, you've obviously found us. I appreciate you searching and finding Talking with TD. Tell a friend. Search Talking with TD on Google Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes. Once you find it, and now that you've found it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Leave a little feedback. rate, review. We appreciate you.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Woo! Energize. Yes, yes, yes. Back from the break. This is always my favorite segment to do. As you heard me sub say, energize. That's what this segment does. It energizes me. I know it energizes my co-host for this segment, and that is Chris Sanders, a.k.a. Antoine Carr.
Hey, I'm just like Ray Charles. I make it do what it do, baby. That's all I do, man. Hey, never tell you, man, you look like Robert Parrish, man. I'm seriously, when we were doing the show, man, it was like, man, TD looks like Robert Parrish. I'm like, he dead on it, man.
Here we go. Here we go. Now, before we go, we're going to talk about Corey Davis, right? Sure. And before we get into that, though, one of the things they always associate with the receiver position is speed. I got to say something to you, man. You know, I've been on your IG. I saw some of the videos. Why you had to look at that dude like that when you passed him just before the finish line on that four by one?
They were talking so much stuff, man, before the meet. We were stretching, right? And they were talking stuff, man. Because we beat them all year, and they're like, "Oh, we about to get y'all today. You don't want none today." I was like, "Okay, I got you, big dog." And that's how. And you know, I'm competitive, man. I mean, sometimes I get a little cocky sometimes, but at the end of the day, when you're talking stuff, I'm coming to get you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm coming to get you, and I don't care if you're 20 yards in front of me, 30 yards in front of me, I'm gonna fight, claw, and scratch to come get you. And that's exactly what happened.
I figured there was something behind it because, like, you don't come across as the type dude who just do that for no particular reason. So I had to ask you about it. I was cracking up when I saw it. You know what I mean? Because you hawked him down. I was surprised everyone, because I know at Penn Relays, right, when you track somebody down, you hear that, ooh.
Ooh, yes. Ooh. I would think I heard yes. It was loud too much.
Yo,
yeah,
that's funny.
I'm coming to get you.
That's funny, man. You did what you had to do. And
appreciate you, Doc.
I was cracking up at that. But now, you know, Corey Davis, let's just spend a little bit of time on him. I'm looking at some of these contracts that receivers have gotten. I think he's going to settle in somewhere between the high 9.5 to $12 million range. I look at Robbie Anderson, who signed with the Panthers, you know, 3 years. It was around $10 million per year. I could see Corey Davis getting that type of deal. What say you?
I think he should, because here's the deal. Everybody keeps talking about, well, we don't need to keep Corey Davis, so we don't need to do that. There's chemistry with Tannehill. There's chemistry with him and A.J. Brown. They need to figure out a way to keep that guy. Now, if he goes and asks for $15, $16 million, yeah, he's got to get up out of here. But if you go to between the 8 and 9 range or even the 10 range to keep him here because of the chemistry of the offense, you got to make sure you keep that guy on the roster. Because, you know, I'll be listening to a lot of talk shows, and, you know, and this is no disrespect. I respect everybody's craft. But the one thing that I hate when they say this, oh, you can just pluck another receiver.
Yeah.
It's not that easy. I mean, look at when the last time that the Tennessee Titans had 2,000 yard receivers, it was Drew Bennett and Derek Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Mason couldn't have do it without Drew Bennett, and Drew Bennett couldn't have did it without Derek Mason. This was the same thing that could have happened with the Tennessee Titans. I know that Corey Davis was about, 16 yards short of getting 1,000 yards, mm-hmm. but basically you can say that both of those receivers were playing at a top level.
No doubt about it. And I think that's what you have to look at, is just the compatibility. But I want to ask you, because Corey is in a situation where, you know, he has a choice, right? He could choose to make this number more manageable, right, to make sure that he's back. Or he could go and chase the money that a free agent is capable of doing. I haven't been in these type of shoes and been in a situation. How do you weigh that out as a guy who's going through that?
But see, it all depends on what Corey wants to do. Because, you know, I know the Tennessee Titans are going to give him a number. Now, if it's a real low number that you think you deserve more, then you go to another team. But he's got to sit down. He's got to evaluate it and really, you know, not just look at it, but look at it and how it's going to benefit him overall. Now, if you go to another team, say you go to the Jacksonville Jaguars, you don't have a supporting cast for you to get to the Super Bowl. You have that with the Tennessee Titans. You have A.J. Brown. You have Janu. I don't know if they're going to sign Janu back. You got Tannehill. You got 22 to send the back of Henry. So you're already a couple of players away from making the Super Bowl. So why not figure out a way to stay with the Tennessee Titans? Because, number one, the chemistry, and number two, you're a couple of players away from making the Super Bowl.
How much does that uncertainty about how, hey, look, how will I mix in with the Chicago Bears? How would I mix in with the Green Bay Packers? How much does that weigh into it?
It weighs a lot because now you got to learn and build a relationship with the whole team again. I mean, if you're with the Tennessee Titans, you already know A.J. Brown. You already know Tannehill. You already know the defense. You already know the coaching staff. So now you go to Chicago. You go to Philly. You go to Green Bay. Even though they may have some great players, you've got to learn the quarterback. You got to learn what makes the offensive coordinator tick. You got to learn it all over again as opposed to, okay, yeah, I know Arthur Smith is gone, but the concept and the philosophy is going to be still the same. So that's the things that he has to weigh. And I'm not saying that he doesn't need to go out there and get that money. Yeah, you got to get that money because it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance. But before you have a quick pulse and jump into the gun, sit and evaluate how close you are to the Super Bowl.
No doubt. And that's the thing you have to think about is, yeah, money is definitely a major thing. But also, you can make a lot of money and hate the place that you're going.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't want to be in that environment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but see, here's what I think the Tennessee Titans can do. And I'm not J-Rob, and I'm not a general manager, and I respect the craft. But what they do is give him a good base salary, and then he can make it up in incentives. So now it makes everybody better, and you can come to an agreement. Say, okay, we give you eight and a half, and then all of a sudden you catch 70 balls, we give you extra million, or we give you extra million five, something like that to where it benefits and it doesn't hit big time against the cap.
So how would you categorize if you had to – you have guys you call, okay, this guy's a possession guy. This guy is a speed guy. This guy is whatever he may be. How would you categorize Corey Davis?
I would categorize him as just making plays. I know that sounds silly. He's not the top receivers. He's not an average receiver. He's just a guy that can make plays. Does that make sense? He's just a guy that says, you know what, when it's third down, I'm going to come up and make a big play. Just like in some of the games that he made and made some key touchdowns, he's that type of guy. Now, if he keeps getting better and better and better, he can be a top echelon receiver. But right now, he's just a guy that makes plays. And you want a guy like that because you go and get somebody else. Okay, say you go and get somebody in the draft. This guy is fast, but he can't run routes. You're going to see A.J. Brown's numbers go down immensely. Because they're going to double him, take him out the game. But what he poses, man, is he poses a guy that can catch the ball and can break a couple of tackles. So you want to have a guy on the other side of A.J. Brown like that.
Yeah, and that's so mandatory. And that's something that you just don't see it talked about. And I'm not sure exactly why. And I always focus on that because you see coverage. And we saw it this past season. Coverage was starting to roll towards A.J. Brown. And A.J. Brown would have five receptions, 60 yards. A touchdown, which, hey, that's good. But then Corey Davis would have a 100-yard game on the opposite side, murdering whoever he's going against one-on-one. And I think that's what you have to look at, and it's so important. But it goes overlooked. And it's funny, you mentioned when you said playmaker, right, a guy that makes plays, rather, I thought of playmaker. And, you know, that took me to 88 Michael Irvin. I'm not saying Corey Davis is Michael Irvin, but, you know, there have been some really good guys that were put in that playmaker category.
Okay, let me give you a perfect example. With the Indianapolis Colts, when they won a Super Bowl, who were their two receivers?
Marvin Harrison, one of my favorite receivers, and Reggie Wayne.
Okay, was Reggie Rain was he wasn't the top echelon receivers, but he was a guy that he was clutch and made plays. Yep. That's exactly what we're looking at with Corey Davis and A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown's the breadwinner. You got Corey Davis just did once in a while, he's going to catch about seven or eight balls, but one of them is going to be a touchdown. You see?
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. So why mess up the chemistry? I understand that it's a business. I understand that you have to sit down and say, okay, is this best for my team? But if this is best for your team and you have the camaraderie, you have the chemistry, you have the love for each other, why change it, boss? Don't change it.
Before we get you out of here, how do you weigh that against Jonnu Smith and the continuity there? Or because it's probably going to come down to, okay, we're going to – they'll be able to say, you know, to themselves, okay, we're going to be able to keep two of these four guys.
Right.
Right? So how do you weigh it down to Corey Davis versus Jonnu Smith versus the defense, which we know
right.
it speaks for itself.
Yeah.
versus Jayon Brown versus Desmond King versus Clowney.
But you know what? With Jonnu Smith, it all depends on what they do with offensive line. Because if you look at the offensive line, the reason why Jonnu's numbers went down is because they were in more like a 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, to keep him, keep protecting the tackle that was on his side. So it all depends on what they do in that situation. But if you have a Desmond King, you can replace a Desmond King because, no disrespect, he only made a couple of plays this year. You know, he made a play when he made the first game, he picked up and made a touchdown against the Detroit Lions. But those other guys, I don't know. It all depends on who's most important. I know in the draft they're going to have to get some defensive players because they're going to have to get not just a defensive player, but a guy that's an impact player at the edge rushing position. That's important. But at the end of the day, you just don't want to start turning over and making players leave because now you got to build right back up.
Oh, you have Notre Dame connections. Dalen Hayes, he's going to be a guest on our show next week. An edge rusher that I think will be there late day two, maybe day three. That could definitely help.
But he might not be there, Dan Gilman.
That's the thing that's so interesting about this group. There's a lot of options. So Chris, I know you got to run. I mean,
appreciate you, boss.
We cross train you here at 102.5. You're on all. Hey, listen, I got that in common with you. So go ahead, do your thing with Stillman and Friends.
Hey, you Batman, I'm Robin, baby. That's what we call it. So the Batman and Robin.
That's right. Good job, Dennis Johnson. We'll holler.
Appreciate you, boss. All right, man.
All right, man. I appreciate you, boss.
For sure. All right, I'm about to run to the next show.
Go ahead.
House. We got.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Here we go. Back from the break. Talking with TD. You hear that, Black Rob? Yeah, I've never seen my face before. My next guest is a guy you probably haven't seen his face before, but you will see his face in the future because this guy is a smooth operator on that football field. I got wide receiver Cade Johnson from South Dakota State. Cade, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey, man, every day is a good day, and it's an even better day when I get to talk to a fellow wide receiver. Of course, you're going places that I've never been. And you're going to get to play on Sundays, so I'm sure every day in preparation is really good for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's great. I'm out here living in California right now, training with my agency and just trying to live life to the fullest. So it's been good to me lately, and I'm excited to just keep this steam rolling forward.
Oh, you're living that Cali life. See, you're out there living in Cali, living a good life. I'm down here in Nashville, but it feels like I'm in Nebraska. You know what I'm saying?
Midwest. I mean, back home, it's in the negatives. And my parents, they both just book trips out here because they need to get out of there. So I'm just like, man.
I feel that. Well, speaking of your parents, I'm glad you mentioned that. Your dad, you know, was an outstanding receiver in his own right, a member of that Cornhuskers championship team in 95. What are some of the things that you've been able to just kind of pull from him as far as knowing the position and learning it through the years?
Yeah, so like back in those wide receiver days, you know, they were a big run first team. So I really got a lot of grittiness from my dad and just the willingness to work hard. I mean, he always taught us at a young age, you know, if we're going to do something, go 100%, go hard. And so I learned that from him, and he just really gave me that winning mindset and just to dominate the person in front of you. So he's definitely taught me a lot, and he still teaches me every day. So I'm all ears when he's talking.
And then your brother, right, CJ, he went to Wyoming, you know, played receiver there. Did you guys have a lot of kind of competition, like that brotherhood, that brotherly comp that you know, a lot of brothers have?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I mean, just my whole life. I mean, he has every record in the state of Nebraska for receiving, and I just, like, my whole life, I just wanted to strive to be him. He was, like, my role model, my idol, who I looked up to and everything. And he did this thing with Josh Allen. And then I also got a little brother, and he got both of us. So he's a four-star. He just enrolled at Iowa and playing wide receiver. So we're just a football family, and that's just what we do is push each other.
Well, daggone, you guys are like the Fullers, right? You got the Fullers, which are a family of DBs. I'm going to go with the Johnsons because that's a family of receivers. You know what I'm saying? It seems like that's what you guys have going.
Already.
So let me ask you this. How did you end up at South Dakota State, right? Your dad went to Nebraska, You, I would imagine, wanted to do that, or maybe not. How did you end up at South Dakota State?
Yeah, I mean, my whole life, that's my dream school was Nebraska, and like going to the games growing up, just being around that culture and the tradition. I mean, there's honestly no place like Nebraska, but it was just a unique story for me. Is my brother was at Wyoming, he was Gatorade Player of the Year my junior year, and so just like he had a really good, easy recruiting process in which he was getting offers, and I got a couple small FCS offers, South Dakota and South Dakota State, right away my junior year, and I was waiting on that FBS offer, so it never came, and I waited too long, so I ended up actually walking on at South Dakota State and just taking a chance, and South Dakota State's been great to me. I love the atmosphere and family down there, and they produce studs, so I wanted to be the next guy for them.
Yeah, you kind of set me up exactly for where I wanted to go, because when you got there, and yeah, Jake Wynacki, Dallas Goedert, I mean, listen, I was in Philly when Goddard was drafted, and he was my number two tight end in that draft. He ended up being one of the first ones, the second one to be selected. But what were you able to gather from just, you know, being there with those guys? I'm sure, even though their body types are different and everything, I'm sure you were able to gather something.
Oh, yeah, so much. I mean, still to this day, I talk to both of them. You know, they're like my big brothers, and in Dallas especially, you know, we keep in contact a decent amount, and just like the mentality that they have and what it takes every day to play at a high level, and just, you know, being a student of their games and picking up from the little things they do that makes them great. Like just that whole mindset and the mentality that they had every time they stepped on the field. And they were both unique in their own situation. So I think I was able to pick each other's brain, like at a different mindset, but just on the fact of Dallas, like he's just a dog out there on the field, and he's going to try to dog you and do whatever he can to get in your head or things like that. So I really appreciate them, and they've done a lot for me that they don't even realize. So it's been nice having them around, no doubt.
So you get to South Dakota State, and your first season playing on the field, 839 return yards. That's outstanding. Kick returns. Obviously, that's something that teams at the next level are going to want. What makes you such a solid kick returner? And I also want to know how you're able to excel as a punt returner as well, if you were put in that role.
Yeah, so I just have a vision, like a knack for it. You know, a lot of guys, when they get back there, don't realize that it's really not a lot of dancing on kickoff return. Like, yeah, you really just want to hit one hole and go. And then just whenever I had the ball in my hands when those two were on the field, it was like – It was already tough getting it in general. So whenever I had it on kickoff return, I wanted to make it an emphasis for just me to, like, hit the hole and give us good field position, you know, give us better field position than a touchback. And so that was my goal every time. And then I just got a knack for it, and it just kind of came more natural to me. I had a bunch of guys in front of me, you know, that took some of that pressure off of me and were able to field punts. But I feel comfortable doing it. I can do it, and I'm sure teams will ask me to, and I'll have no issue stepping in there and doing it.
Yeah, you already know that's going to be something they'll ask you to do. We're talking to Cade Johnson, wide receiver, returner out of South Dakota State. And you had to excuse me for getting so excited when you were saying how important it was to just hit it, because that's refreshing to hear, because so many times when you ask guys about that, they don't say that. So part of me there, I just was happy to hear the right answer from you. Just looking at other parts of your game too, right? So the receiver aspect, I've seen you make plays across the middle. I've seen you make plays down the field. That's been really impressive to me. In 18, you had 17 touchdowns. You increased the reception totals in 19 to 72. Tell me a little bit about your game as a wide receiver.
Yeah, so just like a scrappy guy that wants to catch everything, and when the ball is in the air, like, I just want to be relentless at the point of attack. And our wide receiver coach, just from the minute I got there, was like, you know, it's not a 50-50 ball, it's 0 to 100. You either got it or you don't. Mm. And so just whenever that ball is in the air, just focusing on the ball, seeing it through the catch point. And then after that, you know, the rest is history. Just do whatever I can. And, like, feeling defenders on my back and stuff like that, just, like, being able to do the yak. And then I take pride in going across the middle and getting smacked and still making the catch. I mean, you're going to get hit anyway, so you might as well make the catch in the process. So that's just been my mindset about it. And I'm excited to just keep improving on my game and working on the tools to be successful at the next level.
My favorite wide receiver ever is Andre Reed for the Buffalo Bills. And that's what he would always say. I have no problem going across the middle. I'm going to get hit anyway, so I might as well catch the ball. Excellent quote there. Looking at your game, just as far as your career, you are a part of a pipeline of guys, you know, from Nebraska to South Dakota State. You didn't get to go against Nebraska this season because of, you know, situations surrounding, not you personally, but the college football itself with COVID-19. But you did play against Minnesota in 2019, and I think that's a game that a lot of people are going to go to because that's where you were able to level up and go against a big-time program. So tell me, how was that game? Were you going into that like, hey, I got to really show and prove, or was it just like, look, man, it's another day at the office and I'm just checking in to work?
Yeah, that's just my mindset is like what you said. Obviously, like, you understand the team you're going against, and it was more unique just as the year was going on, just to see how good Minnesota was, and that was really rewarding for me, but just that mindset every time I step on the field, whether we're playing, you know, low FCS Division I tier or FBS guys, and that really hurt me. And you know, the year before, we were supposed to play Iowa State, and we were out there for like 5 minutes until the lightning struck, and it was just a crappy night. You know, we got on the bus to go there, and then we had to drive back that same night just without even playing a game. So I really wanted to make an emphasis that I belonged on that level. And then even getting in the portal before I declared for the draft, my top school, like my number one school, was Minnesota. Like, that's where I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. Me and Coach Fleck built a really good relationship and things like that. So just being at that level and playing on that level, you know, it's really peace. It gives you a lot of peace and rewarding for me, of course.
You would have been out there with Rashad Bateman. That would have been dope to watch. Benjamin St. Juice, you had to go against him there in Minnesota. And I would imagine you had your wins and losses there, and you got to transfer that over to the Senior Bowl. So tell me about that Senior Bowl experience, especially the one-on-ones, because you were showing off there.
Yeah, I mean, that was just like the same mentality as I was saying. It's just something to prove. I mean, you go in there and you show up on that practice field with the South Dakota State helmet, and nobody even knows, like, where your school is at. So I wanted to make it an emphasis that people saw me and realized, you know, that I belong and I can play at a high level. And just not to do too much, but just play my game and be comfortable, you know. There was a little nerves there with not stepping on the field for 13 months and getting live reps like that. But I just knew, like, after I was out there and I got a feel for the turf and got my feet under, got my legs under me, that, you know, I could do anything I put my mind to. Mm-hmm. And just being out there and playing with the quarterbacks that were there, and my wide receiver room was amazing. They were really accepting all week. And so, you know, it was just a great week in general, and just being able to make plays again, you know, that felt good.
And you know, Kay, you gave him one of the best catches down there, right? That left hand, one-hand stab right there. It was Wednesday practice.
Yeah, I got this thing with my left hand. I made a Sports Center the first game of my redshirt sophomore year, the same left hand. I mean, there's just something to it, so. Let's keep it going.
Yeah, something magical with that. What was the biggest thing about getting back onto the field? Because obviously, you know, you weren't able to be out there in 2020 because of the COVID situation for college football. Yeah. What was it?
I think just showing scouts that I still got it. It's like a lot of guys opted out this year, and it was just a really strange year with COVID, a lot of cancellation in games, and it just really wasn't a regular year. And so just going out there and showing scouts, you know, my play style and how I can help their team if they're thinking about drafting me or need that slot receiver or really wherever, special teams. You know, I really just wanted to bust my tail all week and make an emphasis that I could do special teams, I could play slot, I could play outside, just be that every down receiver in the league and bring a lot to a team. So I feel like I did a good job of that, and I just really wanted to show scouts that, you know, I haven't lost a step, and if anything, I gained one.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is a receiver that actually played gunner on punt team. So it's like buy one, get a few free, right? You get a slot guy, you get an outside guy, you get a gunner, you get a returner in the kickoff or punt return game. That's the value of versatility. And He has that dog in him. Okay, you play with that dog. You know, I watch you in downfield blocking. You mentioned getting that from your dad, so that's another thing that I definitely want to bring up. And that being said, having that dog in you, playing so many special teams, so many spots on the field, that leads me to the player that you remind me of when I watch you, and that's Doug Baldwin, the Seattle Seahawks receiver. And I always loved his game because he played angry and he played with an edge, and you play with that too.
That's dope. I mean, anytime I can get compared to a great like that, it is amazing. Like, the crazy thing is, too, is sitting down and talking with a lot of teams is same team, the receiver that's lining up next to him and Tyler Lockett, I get that comparison a lot, too. So those are just scrappy guys that just get it done. And Doug Baldwin, his release point, and just, like, the crossovers he has at the line, like, he's literally out there playing basketball. So I'm studying his releases and that's awesome. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I laugh like that because I told Elijah, my producer, before we got on, I said, you know, he reminds me of Tyler Lockett. But then in talking to you and going back and watching a little bit more, I said, hey, you know, he got the Doug Baldwin dog to him, too. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, so I'll take both.
Yeah, definitely. Last thing before you get out of here, just take me through going against press coverage. Obviously, for a guy like DK Metcalf, you know, hey, you're a bigger target, but you're stronger. You could get through it. How do you beat press coverage as a guy that's, you know, in that 5'11 range, 190?
Yeah, so just, you know, the special thing about me is just being out in California. My wide receiver coach is actually TJ Houzmanzadeh. Mm. And so I had 2 or 3 weeks with him just before I went out to the Senior Bowl to just kind of, like, hone in on my craft and stuff like that and finding ways that I can specialize in my release and watching the film and looking back, just like my quick twitch at the line and really just not messing around with the DB. It's, you know, you got to get somewhere. There's only so much time in the backfield that you have with the quarterback. And so really making an emphasis on that. And TJ, you know, he really helped me a lot just in these past couple months. And he's a great mentor and he gives me looks. So I credit a lot of that to him and just, you know, doing everything full speed and setting everything up the same so the DB can never be predictable in what you're doing.
That's awesome. My coaches used to say no chatter at the line of scrimmage. You know, that's what they used to tell me. So you're definitely on the right track. You got the combine coming up. I know you'll go down there and do what you have to do. I wish you the best, Cade. Let's keep in touch, man. I really respect your game and the way you play, man. And I wish you the best.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you as well.
Yeah, for sure, man. You take care.
You too.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
Let that play for a second. All right, back from the break. We're going to keep this thing rolling, talking with TD. I wanted to put just like some hard-hitting OG type of music, you know what I mean? Because that's the type of game that my next guest has, just a hard-hitting, old-school style of game, relentless motor. I got my guy Jonathan Cooper out of Ohio State. He's the DN / outside linebacker. Jonathan, what's good, man?
Hey, how you guys doing, man? Appreciate you putting me on the show. And yeah. I got to say, I did like that music. Hey, music was pretty smooth, man.
Hey, you see, you're a youngster. I'm 44 years old. You know what I'm saying? You're a youngster. Let me put you on. That's Cool G Rap, all right?
I got an old soul. I got an old soul, though.
I can hear it for sure, man. So, yeah, make sure you check that out, man. Cool G Rap, that's his third album. It's called 4-5-6. There's a few songs on there that you'll definitely like. But let's get into your game, man. I think, you know, the first thing that stands out to me is just, like, I'm trying to understand what's going on in Ohio State, right? Because you see the Bosas, you know what I mean, Chase Young, and now here you are. What is Larry Johnson doing with you guys out there, man?
Obviously Coach Johnson is a legend in the game. I just feel like he emphasizes the technique. You know, you can see the people that he's produced over throughout the years. I mean, some amazing defensive ends throughout the years, and just teaching technique, teaching hands, teaching how to rush the passer. You know, that's his specialty, and I feel like we're just all a product of that. I'm just the next one in line.
Now, when you go out there knowing that you have such refined technique and you have that advantage of what Coach Johnson has brought to you, does it, like, give you a mental edge? You know what I'm saying? Like, are you like, all right, he does this, I'm going to do that? Like, does that put you there?
Yeah, it definitely helps. It helps out a lot just because, you know, you got to be able to switch up your moves. Not every single move is going to work all the time. And because Coach Johnson also helps us with different things in our toolbox, but also having studying the offensive lineman and knowing how he's saying, where his hands are coming in, you know, it helps out just so that you know exactly how to beat your opponent. You know what moves are going to work. You know which steps to take. It does provide a mental edge for me.
And it's funny because I posted a video yesterday, right? And you put that mini Euro step on a couple of Indiana linemen, and it worked out so well. Well, what's your repertoire? Yeah. What do you like to go to first?
I feel like speed is always the first thing to see how the offensive lineman sets up. I mean, you watch a lot of film on a guy, but until you're actually going out there against them, that's when you get to feel them. So I say speed. And then my favorite move is kind of speed to power. I feel like I'm a very strong physical guy. I feel like now people really look at me and they say, like, oh, he's probably going to try to run around me. Then once I bring him up the field just a little bit and get him to run with me, and then that's when, you know, go with a long arm or go with just a two-hand bull right through the chest just to make sure that he feels you so that you can set up other moves for later throughout the game. So speed of power is definitely my favorite move to go to straight off the bat.
And I love how you mentioned that speed to power, because when you can combine that with, like, just being, like, a heavy-headed type of guy, it really, mm-hmm. like, as you mentioned, it catches them off balance. And next thing you know, they're on the ground and you're making your way to the quarterback. And then watching you, that's why you remind me of Steven Means. He's a pass rusher for the Falcons. And I remember talking to Lane Johnson, the right tackle for the Eagles. And when he was in Philly, I would always say, hey, Lane, who was the toughest guy to go against? And he would say Steven Means because of that speed to power aspect.
Oh, yeah. Nah, Steven Means does a great job of speed to power. He's actually some guy I've been watching. Another person who does a great job in speed of power is Cameron Wake.
Yeah,
his get off the ball and then his power, the things that he can do off his power, because people actually respect going through him, sets him up so he can do other moves. I feel like that's just another once you get your speed of power down, it opens up every other part of your game to where you can get the offensive tackle to basically do what you want them to do instead of you reacting off of them.
Interesting story about Cam Wake, because he was here in Nashville in 2019. I remember talking to him. He played in Canada. And he said when he came here, he was always jumping off sides because he wasn't used to, you know, being right there on the ball. Because in Canada, you got to line up a yard off of the ball. I thought that was funny. Right. But you mentioned his get off, and there it is right there. So, but you specifically, I want to get into you. And I always like to talk about the makeup of the man that I'm talking to. And, you know, if we go back to your history, I know you and your mother, you're very close. You know, she was 17 when she got pregnant with you. She had you at 18. She was a basketball player. You were a preemie. I mean,
yes, sir.
it's really interesting just seeing how, you know, everything worked out. I love the mission statement. And I want you to let my listeners know how she had that mission statement and just your relationship with her.
Yeah, well, my mom is an amazing woman. I can't speak any more highly of her, honestly. I mean, she's just amazing. She laid down the blueprint, honestly, for me, you know, with being a young black female who had me at a young age. You know, she could have just been another statistic and let everything just, like, fall in place, not work as hard anymore, you know, do whatever, especially being a single mother, too. But, you know, she didn't let that define who she was, and she made that mission statement. For anybody who is checking it out, it's a Big Ten story. You could probably search it and look that up. It's the story about me and my mom, and she wrote that mission statement, and she showed me that when I was very, very young. And when I was growing up, I was very motivated, very just want to be successful, and I decided to make my own. And honestly, the goals that I had listed for myself, I'm living them right now just because of my work ethic and actually writing them down on a piece of paper and then getting up every day and working every single day. And me and my mom, we have similar mindsets. You know, we're not going to stop for nobody, and we're just going to keep going as hard as we can. And she instilled that in me, and I can't thank her enough for doing that, because now I feel like there's nothing in my way that can stop me from what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's real talk right there. And ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Jonathan Cooper, Ohio State edge defender. Jonathan, you know, getting to Ohio State, you know, you get there, I'm sure you have expectations. I'm sure you right. knew what Coach Johnson brought to the table. And then being around just that right. pass rushing culture, how much did that help develop you as a player?
It helped me a lot, especially coming in. I came in with Nick Bosa, mm-hmm. And obviously amazing defensive end, amazing athlete, and then great guys in front of me like Tyquan Lewis, Sam Hubbard, Jalen Holmes, who are doing really good league. You know, being around those guys helped me to be a better player and showed me kind of what I was supposed to be doing in order to get to where I wanted to be, because they were doing it. So it developed me really, really fast. And I feel like I was like ready to go. But obviously my freshman, sophomore year didn't play too much, played a lot of special teams because of those guys in front of me. Mm. And then my junior year, my first career starting, I feel like honestly that whole entire year, I wasn't the player that I knew I was. I felt like those first start jitters, kind of like it took me a while to kind of get in rhythm into myself. And then I started playing pretty well in my junior year towards the end of my career, the end of the season, I mean. But then that next year, going into senior year, I felt ready. I was playing the best ball I ever had. I had that great camp. But unfortunately, we know how things turned out with injuries. But coming in this last year in 2020, even with the shortened season, definitely tried to make the world and everybody see the type of player that I am. And honestly, I feel like that's one of the top defensive ends in the country and definitely in this draft. And if you turn on my tape, I feel like you can see that. And I feel like my best ball is yet to come, to be honest.
And just to piggyback off of that real quick, why do you say that? What is it about you that makes you one of the best DNs, outside linebackers in this draft?
Not only I feel like it's my ability to pass rush, and like I showed at the Senior Bowl week, PFF has some things on me about my pass rush winning percentage and things like that, but I feel like it's my knowledge of the game. I'm obsessed with the game and wanting to be the best that I can be. It's never enough for me. You know, I'm not going to ever settle for less than the best. You know, that's why I'm always on film. I'm always offensive tackles. And I feel like when you have somebody who goes as hard as I do, loves the game, and also has stuff behind them that you can see and turn on the tape and be like, oh, this guy can play football. You know, those things are definitely a great combination to have. And I feel like I have that. I'm just excited. I know my ball is yet to come because I've only had a year playing at my best. And I have plenty more years to show what I'm capable of.
I'll say this, Jonathan. I know that you're a student of the game, and I know that you watch a lot of ball because you were able to talk about Steven Means like as if, you know what I mean, you with confidence. So that tells me, because not a lot of folks know about Steven Means. You know, so I give you your props there.
Yeah. the one of the guys who I've been actually watching right now, who I feel like I'm like, is Whitney Mercellus. I feel like my game resembles him, and obviously we know how his career is going. It's going pretty good. But I feel like just with that physical mentality and when he goes, he's going. And I feel like that's another person who I kind of compare myself to.
You know who had a big part in his upward trajectory when he was in Houston, right? He's actually a fellow The Ohio State guy by the name of Mike Vrabel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Coach Vrabel, man. I didn't know that though.
Yeah, yeah. He coached Merciless down in Houston. He was the outside linebackers coach, and he coached Merciless. He was real big. That's a matter of fact why Jadeveon Clowney came here this past year. Wow. You know, when he was on the free agent tour. Have you had any interaction with Mike Vrabel? I know he wasn't in Mobile for the Senior Bowl, but I mean, just talking about in general.
What's funny is I actually have, but like freshman, sophomore year of high school, when I was being like, when I was going to like Ohio State camps, and he was the defensive line coach at Ohio State, and I was one of the guys just going to an Ohio State camp, one of those kids, and he was coaching the camp and coaching me personally, and I was like my first introduced to him, and what I say he didn't discriminate at all and treated me like I was one of the Ohio State players. Oh, man, it was definitely an eye-opener. And I was a young kid. I was like 13, 14 years old. But ever since then, I've always remembered Mike Vrabel and the kind of guy that he was, man. He's intense. I love it.
He likes to put hands on guys too, man. During practice, you see that he puts hands on them. It's really interesting. I've seen various head coaches, you know, a good four of them in the teams that I've covered, but he is different. Another guy that's different is your DC, man. You know, 2019, I remember that summer, right? This dude, Kerry Coombs, it's 97 daggone degrees out. He was always the first one out there, and he'd be walking around with a full cup of coffee. I never understood the dude. What's your funniest Kerry Coombs story? I got to hear it, man.
My funniest Kerry Coombs story. Let's see, man. Dude is crazy. So we have a special teams meetings, right? And in our special teams meeting, things get pretty intense. But one time we were bringing in a new coach, and he didn't really know how to get the crowd going, like get the team going, because like to start off the special teams meeting, we clap it up, we get hype. Mm-hmm. I mean, music is blasting. I mean, it's time to go with special teams. The first guy we were bringing in didn't really know what to do. Man, Coach Combs like flips out on the coach and like starts just yelling at the top of his lungs like he does. Then like I'm like a freshman, so I'm like just not into it. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on? He starts clapping, yelling at the players. I think he might have flipped the chair, and I mean, like you said, after everything was done, said and over, and after he clapped us up and we all got hyped, he goes back to his chair, takes his and just sips it like nothing happened.
like nothing happens, man.
Like it's everyday normal Kerry Coombs. I was like, man, yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah, Coach made me feel like a punk the one time because I asked him about the coffee. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, man, you just drink it like. You drink that coffee every day? And he was like, yeah, and asked me how I drink my coffee. And I was like, oh, man, like I put a little cream in there, some sugar. He was like, nah, man, I drink mine straight, black, like a man.
Straight,
I was like,
black. I'm like,
oh, you really low-key just trying to chump me. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was funny, man. But let's keep it moving and go to the Senior Bowl. I'm really enjoying this interview, man. We had Jonathan Cooper, Ohio State edge defender. Let's talk about the Senior Bowl and just those one-on-ones. And let me tell you something. That your side of the field and those one-on-ones, I've seen some hearts get taken. And I've seen some lunch money get stolen. For you, what was it that allowed you to go out there and not be the guy that had your lunch money taken?
It's just that mentality, man. It's, no matter who you line up against, it's just like I'm like they don't know me. Like, I'm the dog. Like, obviously, we're all great players here, but, like, what makes me different? And I feel like what makes me so different is how hard I go, where I come from, how I grew up, and how, like, I refuse to lose. You know, a lot of people like winning, but I hate losing, you know, and that's just me. Like, and especially when it comes to one-on-one, that's man-on-man. That's mano-a-mano, and that's either you win or you lose. And I remember the first couple of reps, like, I wanted to set a tone and a pace to not just the defensive coaches there, but offensive line that, like, hey, like, I'm not a guy you're going to shove around. And I remember on one of those plays, I did straight speed to power. Like, almost threw a guy on his back, like, threw his backpedaling. Went right through his chest. And, like I said, that's me. I've definitely never let any other man steal my lunch money. Y'all grown man here, but it's a respect thing.
I love that. So I would imagine the respect, that's your why, you know, when you're out there playing. Where are you working out? How are you getting ready for everything?
So I'm working out in Fort Lauderdale, Florida with XPE. They're great down here. Definitely feel like I'm getting faster, getting stronger. I think I'm going to kill it at pro day for sure.
Any other guys out? Well, I know there are, so let me rephrase the question. Who else is out there working with you?
So we got another Ohio State guy. We got Tuff Borland.
Okay.
We got Shaka Tony from Penn State.
Yes.
We got Cam Poole from Tulane, who did really well at the Senior Bowl. It's like my guy. Got Darius Stills from West Virginia. We got Cornell Powell from
Clemson.
Yep. We got Izzy. I don't know his last name, but he's a tall corner from South Carolina. I know a lot. We got also GD Jared Dokes from Cincinnati, running back.
Okay.
Yeah, we got a lot of guys, and I mean they're all great. Honestly, they're all great guys. I wish nothing for the best for them. We definitely are developing a better relationship down here too.
That's dope. You guys could push each other. Last thing before we get you out of here, I know at the Senior Bowl, pretty much all teams were meeting with all of the players. How did your conversation with the Titans go? What was some of the feedback they gave you?
My conversation with the Titans went great. Just with the vibe, the energy, the talking with them, I think they really like me as a player and even more as a person. And I feel like what's really important is, you know, they always get to see guys on film, but actually meeting a guy in person sets the tone, and you get to see what they're all about. My conversation went great. Like I said, whether it's a defensive end or outside linebacker in the league, I feel like I'm going to be successful in both aspects. I feel I'm fast enough. My hips are mobile enough. I know how to play in space. Yeah, no, my conversation went great.
That's dope. Teams want to be multiple up front, and you present that option. Pop down there, hand in the dirt in the NASCAR, stand up in the 3-4, whichever needs to be, man. So, listen, I ran over, but you know what? It was worth it. I apologize for keeping you longer than you know, what was set. Yeah, so
you said we were just talking.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that you want to make sure that you do as you're going through, and obviously you know this already, but let your love for the game really come through in your conversation. And that's something that a lot of the real, true evaluators, that's what they're gauging when they're talking to you. And it's clear that you have that. So, man, I appreciate you. Let's keep in touch, man. And, you know, just wish you the best as you work through this. Hopefully we'll see you here in Nashville.
Yes, sir. Hopefully, man. Just let me know. If I get that call, I'm going to be so excited. So
no doubt. No doubt. All right, man. I appreciate you, Jonathan. Take care.
All right. I appreciate you.
All right, now.
This is Corey Davis. Are you talking with TD?
I want to just let that play, man. Yo, that's a classic music right there, boy. Brand Nubian. So let's get into this because I think it's something that's pertinent. I posted something on Tuesday in regards to Isaiah Wilson and his status. Ah, man, it's a sticky situation, a very sticky, and it's crazy because they always say hindsight is 20/20, and it always is. But my goodness, even looking back on it, you know, and even at that time, no one would have, this stuff that this guy, I'm stumbling over words because I really don't know what to say. I mean, he's gotten into all kinds of stuff.
I think J-Rob said it best during that press conference where he said, the young man we talked to during the draft process is not the same one that came to Nashville. And somewhere in between the draft process and coming to Tennessee and becoming a professional football player, something got lost in translation or something was masked over very, very well to the point where all the problems that came to the surface this year were just well hidden under the radar. Or, and I guess that might be a problem of the draft process itself with COVID-19 not being able to get face-to-face, I guess, in-person interaction, or maybe not being able to do as much digging as you can usually do. But somewhere in between, there were some signals that got really, really crossed.
I don't think that's the case, though, because they dug deep. I know for a fact they dug very deep about him. And if there was something, it would have came up.
Or it was ignored.
I don't think it was ignored. I mean, how many issues? This organization doesn't associate themselves with that.
That's what's so puzzling about it.
There's so much positivity, which, by the way, they had an initiative that, you know, raised, I think it was $130,000 for social justice. The organization itself, it's through the NFL's Inspire Change initiative. The Titans raised over $130,000 this past year. And it went to different organizations, 100 Black Men in Middle Tennessee, YWCA, A Man Together, and Project Return. Just wanted to throw that in there. But I say that to say this. This organization doesn't attach themselves to negativity. So if there were issues, it would have, A, been vetted, a.k.a. Jeffrey Simmons. They vetted all that.
Thoroughly.
He spoke to Amy Adams Strunk, Miss Amy Adams Strunk himself. You saw that it was, you've seen it. The guy has been, there's no issues. He's actually been a model player, a model guy for the organization. That, you know, as Mike Vrabel says, sometimes you have good people who make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. I think right now, that's what they're trying to sort out is, is Isaiah Wilson a good person that makes bad decisions, plural? Or is just something not right there? I don't know. And that's why he was placed on the NFI list. His social media, and look, I'm not here to be a social media cop. I'm not here to get on a pedestal, get on a soapbox, or anything like that. I just really wonder, you see some of the things that you see, knowing some of the things that, you know, he's had go on in the past, it's like, what? I mean, I'm kind of at a loss for words for it. I couldn't imagine what an organization or a guy like John Robinson, who put his stamp on this pick, is thinking. But fortunately, these guys are accessible, so we got to find out what John Robinson was thinking in regards to the Isaiah Wilson situation. I thought it was pretty interesting what he said because, you know, this Titans group, they don't always come straight forward with their disappointment like this. But here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, we put him on the reserve non-football illness list there. I haven't spoken to him since that list got put out. You know, I think, you know, we did a lot of work a year ago, leading up to selecting him, you know, the evaluation process, talking to, you know, different sources, visiting with him countless numbers of times. And for whatever reason, you know, the player that this fall was here in Nashville wasn't the guy that was that we spent time with last year. So I think, you know, he's going to have to make a determination if he wants to do everything necessary to play pro football. And that's going to be, you know, on him. I know what the expectation level is here. It's no different than any other player on the football team. You know, we have a certain standard, that we want players, to prepare and perform at professionally, and as people, and, a lot of work to be done there.
So you heard it right there. And you know, he said there are standards and we know that there are standards. I just thought it was interesting, you know, as you mentioned before, the quote was, they feel that the guy that they got is not the same as the one that they, evaluated. So that tells you right there, if there were issues, those things would have been unearthed. I don't feel like, because this is, they, for the most part, you know, John Roberts, they'll be accountable. If that was something, they say, well, you know, there were some things that we thought we could work through. But instead, he said, this isn't the same. That's a very damning comment. I want to see how this situation works out. In my opinion, they can't release him. And, you know, a lot of fans are saying, hey, get rid of him, get him off the team. You cannot do that.
It's not that simple.
It's not. The contract is guaranteed. Right. So at this point, you know, is it worth, you know, giving a guy all these millions of dollars? You're going to accelerate his hit. If you release him, is it worth doing that? Or, okay, look, man, we're going to apply tough love. I'm going to wash my hands of it. We'll allow him to figure it out. If he doesn't this year, then, hey, time to go. I could see that being the case. But whatever it is, as the music played when we came in, slow down. That's what he has to do. He needs to slow down because it's just not going the right direction for him. But there's still hope. He could turn it around and get back to that chuckle that the Titans fell in love with when they had him walk sideways so he could get through the door at the combine. That was funny, you know, when he talked about that after he got drafted. But those were better days. There are better days ahead for us as we continue to give you this draft content. Ladies and gentlemen, each week, 2 to 3 prospects. I know Exos, the training facility, is going to have a combine. I think we should get my guy Brent Callaway on. So I'll work on that for each of you. This is what we do. Give you different stuff that you don't really find too many other places. That's what Elijah and I specialize in. So we appreciate you tuning in. Again, make sure you search, subscribe, and review Talking with TD. Appreciate Elijah for making it happen. Appreciate Kay Johnson. Shout out to Jonathan Cooper as well. And shout out to each of you for tuning in. God bless and good night.